Hi, I'm Marie.
And I'm Emily.
And we're registered dietitians who love to look at the research when it comes to all things diets and supplements.
With years of working with professional and collegiate athletes, we've seen it all, and we're here to set the record straight.
On this podcast, we break down popular diets and supplements to let you know what's legit
and what's BS.
BS Podcast. We are back after a 3-week break. We've got a good one for you guys today. We're going to be talking about red food dye. This is something that a lot of people have been told is just bad for you in general and that nobody should have it. But where it's really, really popular is with parents making sure that their kids don't eat red food dye. So there's all sorts of ideas out there about red food dye. But as we do, we're going to look into it today, look at the science, and let you all know if red food dye is something that we should be avoiding or not. We also have a good BSPS for you. We're talking about a TikTok trend, which this was a listener submission because I am admittedly not on TikTok. I tried it for a minute and decided, you know, Instagram's going to be my thing. I got to focus on one. But before we get into our episode, as always, if you like our podcast, if you're a frequent listener, please do subscribe, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or a 5-star rating on Spotify. We've been getting some more reviews lately, which we appreciate you all so much for those. They really help us out a lot. Keep sending us those topic suggestions. We love getting those. We love hearing from our listeners. So you can send us topic suggestions, questions, comments, whatever. Just say hi, whatever you want, by DMing us on our Instagram, which is rds_vs_bs_pod. Or you can contact us through our contact page on our website, rdsversusbs.com. As always, if you're interested in getting healthier, we love helping people cut through the BS, figure out a way of eating for them that's going to work in the long term. So Marie and I are both taking one-on-one clients. If you're interested in learning more about what it would be like to work with us, you can check us out on our contact page, rdsversusbs.com. Or just DM us on our Instagram. Well, let's get into it. So as always, starting off with a shit I saw at the grocery store. And this week, Marie has one for us. So Marie, what do you have for us?
Yes. So this comes courtesy of one of our colleagues, mentors. Her name is Lauren Link. Those who are in the dietitian world probably know who this is. If you guys do not know her, I would recommend checking out her Instagram. She has a lot of basically same thing as shit at the grocery store. She calls it marketing madness that she does. Again, her name is Lauren Link. And she recently did one that was on our last topic. So I wanted to bring it up. So this is a cookie. It's called Jack's Paleo Kitchen Soft and Delicious Chocolate Chip Cookies. And then in big bold letters at the bottom, it says made with grass-fed collagen. If you listened to our podcast last week, you know that we talked about adding collagen to a bunch of food products. Probably not really going to do anything. Not hurting, but definitely part of an upcharge for this cookie. And do you need to really be worrying about your collagen intake when you're eating a cookie and choosing a cookie? And how much collagen are they possibly putting in this cookie? So you go to the nutrition facts on the back, and collagen is the third to last ingredient out of a list of about 15.
Oh, no.
And if you look at the total protein that's in this whole serving of cookie, it's 1 gram.
Oh, come on.
So again, if you guys didn't listen to last week's episode, we talked about how if you want to supplement collagen and have it maybe even like the smallest amount of evidence that it might do something, you need to be supplementing 15 grams. So the total amount of protein in this entire serving of cookie is 1 gram. And I would say, I don't know, like a small percentage of that might be the added collagen. So you're getting less than a gram of collagen in here. Again, nothing wrong with the fact that they've added collagen to it, but it's like, what's the point? That you are being upcharged for the marketing on there that they've added collagen and the fact that they've added collagen. And it is literally so small of amount of collagen that it's not doing anything.
Right. I feel like a good rule with that is if you're looking at a food or whatever, and they say they have collagen in it, the first thing you should do is look at that protein amount, because mm-hmm. collagen is protein. And if there's 1 gram in it, they just sprinkled a little bit of collagen in this, and it's not going to be worth the upcharge. It's not doing anything for your body. Such a good find. That's crazy that collagen's found its way into cookies too. Like, what? Okay, well, let's get into today. So, red food dye. This is so funny because every time I start researching something, I probably do what everyone else in the world does when they say, oh, I researched it. You just type it into Google. But I do that too because I want to see what's like, what comes up when people just Google these things. So red food dye, basically what we're talking about is red dye 40. So that is the additive that's found in a bunch of different foods that turns foods red. The types of foods you're thinking, like red velvet cake, some of that probably has it, like any super red candy, gum, sometimes it's in that, Jello, fruit snacks, things like that. They're like mega red. Or I'm thinking like the Mountain Dew Code Red. I don't even know if they sell that anymore. That for sure has red 40 in it. Pretty much what it is it's a synthetic color additive. It's made from petroleum. So people hear that and they're like, oh my God, I'm eating petroleum or I'm giving my child petroleum. There's no way this is good. So that's kind of the first scary thing you see on Google. When you just type it in, it's like red dye 40. It's synthetic, which is buzzword. And people are like, oh, synthetic things are bad. And then they see petroleum. They're like, well, this has to be bad for me. But we're going to get into it. So what the claims are specifically around red dye 40 is that it's not good specifically for people who have allergies or ADHD and that it can actually make both of those worse. Some people claim that eating red dye 40 can even cause ADHD. And the biggest focus that I saw when I was looking at these is mostly with children. So people are afraid that eating foods with red dye 40 is going to cause allergies, migraines, and hyperactivity, specifically in children, which is a bummer because kids love those red Jello and red candy and Code Red Mountain Dew. Like all that stuff is, you know, adults like it too, but it's kind of made for kids to be like, oh, big, bright, tasty sweets. Like I love this stuff. Marie, can you help us get into like, where does this idea even come from?
Yeah, because it seems super random, right? Like, why do people all of a sudden start freaking out about red food dye? And it is kind of funny because the origin of where this fear comes from is actually looking into 6 different food colorings. But for whatever reason, red is the one that created the most panic. But in 2007, there was a study that was published in The Lancet. It was a randomized double-blind placebo trial. It was a decently well, you know, it wasn't just some case study or whatever. It was a randomized controlled trial. They were looking specifically at 6 different food colorings if they affected childhood behavior. They had 153 3-year-olds and 144 8-to-9-year-olds in the study. And basically what they did is they were given 2 drinks or a placebo. So mix A and mix B were drinks that had mixes of 3 of the 6 additives. The 6 dyes that they were looking at were yellow number 6, quinoline yellow, carmoisine, not sure how you say that one, but that's another, I think another type of yellow, the red 40, yellow number 5, and Ponceau 4R. I'm not going to lie, I am not 100% sure what that last one is. But yeah, so those are the 6, though. So red 40 was one of these that they were looking at. They had 2 different mixes. So one mix had 3 of those mixed together. The other mix, mix B, had the other 3 mixed together, and then they had a placebo. The children were given 2 drinks a day. And they did find that there was an increase in bad behavior or hyperactivity in the children who were given the mixes that had those food chemicals that they were looking at versus just doing the placebo. And what they used to measure this was a combination of perception. So basically they had the teacher saying whether or not they felt the children were more or less hyperactive. And then they also were doing a computer test and they were testing their attentiveness to that computer test. So, I mean, there was a significant difference between the adverse effects when they were given the mixes versus the placebo. So it did seem like potentially there was a little bit of hyperactivity that was induced when the children were given the juices with the additives versus not. But one thing to keep in mind with this study, first of all, this was like the first one of its kind, right? So usually when we do studies like this, and this is sort of a glimpse into, oh shit, we might be onto something. We need to keep testing this because as we've talked about in almost every episode, any study design is going to have some sort of flaw, some sort of bias, some sort of potential placebo effect with it. So we want to continually do this study to make sure if the results hold up over time. And this was the very first one that came out. 300 is not a bad sample size, but it's also not a super large sample size. And these children were given these drinks twice a day for 6 weeks straight. So if you're talking about the amount of red food dye that somebody might realistically be exposed to every day as a child versus in this study, I don't know if that's quite like a one-to-one. You know, I don't know if there's a whole lot of kids. I mean, there might be, you know, there might be a bunch of kids drinking like a bunch of Kool-Aid or whatever every single day. But when we're talking about like this sort of black or white, like this absolute necessity to totally avoid any of these ingredients versus green light to drink it, there's a difference between like once a month going to a party and having some Kool-Aid versus drinking it twice a day every day. So I did want to point that out. And another big criticism of this study, which isn't really the problem of the study, but it's the problem that we took this study and then just ran with it versus like continuing further testing based off of these results, is that, like I said, there's a mix of three of these different additives in one, a different mix of the additives in the other. There was no testing of just one additive at a time. So we also don't know if some of these results were because of the combination of the different additives versus just one individual one being the culprit.
Curious that Red 40 was the one that was kind of singled out here. And also like what you're saying about how it was many different additives at once. That's just your classic issues with nutrition research, is that it's never just one thing. It's not like this person is only eating Red 40, right? And we see what happens. It's always a mix of things. There's so many different things that we eat throughout the day. It's hard to really narrow it down. We do the best we can. Luckily, with any food additive, we as the, you know, general public don't have to know every single research study and be able to like break it all down, because that's what the FDA does, right? The Food and Drug Administration looks at these different additives in foods and determines whether they are safe or not. Now, not everyone trusts what the FDA has to say, but I can say that what they do is look at all the research out there and do kind of like what you and I do, Marie. We take all the research and make a decision based on that, like a best decision. And what I found was interesting specifically with Red 40 was that, you know, it's been studied and approved by the FDA, but it's also approved as a food dye for use in the European Union. So people always, like Food Babe loves doing this, saying, oh, there's this additive that we can have in the US, but it's banned in Europe. And then, you know, we could go down a whole rabbit hole there. But Red 40 is one that even like Europe's been like, yep, it's good, you know. And same with the EPA has even determined that Red Dye 40 is of low concern. Not only that, but the Food and Agriculture Organization and the World Health Organization also agree that the amount of Red Dye 40 that people get does not present a health concern. So these agencies across the world are all kind of on the same page here, which you don't always see when it comes to Red 40. But why are people still nervous about Red 40? What I wanted to do, just to put things in a little bit of perspective, when these groups are looking at research, they look at something called ADI, which is an estimate of the amount of a substance in food that can be consumed daily over a lifetime without having adverse health effects. So they have determined that Red 40 has an acceptable daily intake, an ADI of 3.2 milligrams per pound of body weight. So what that actually means is for a 150-pound person, they could have up to 476 milligrams of red dye 40 per day over an entire lifetime and not experience any adverse health effects. Great. Okay, that's the upper limit. What do people normally get? A study showed that Americans age 2 and older consume an average of 0.002 milligrams of red dye 40 per pound, which, like I said earlier, the recommendation is no more than 3.2 milligrams. So we're comparing 3.2 milligrams to, in reality, what people are eating on average is 0.002 milligrams. So well below the ADI. I also get that, hey, there are people out there who don't eat any red dye 40, and there are people out there who probably eat way more. But the amount more you would have to eat to get anywhere close to that ADI, like, you'd have to only eat red food. Like, one of those diets, the red food diet, but you cheat and you dye everything red. Like, that's what you would have to be doing. So with that in mind, okay, people still scared of it. There have also been allergic reactions that have been reported in children and adults from food coloring. The thing is, they tend to be rare, mild, and mainly involving the skin. So when we were talking about the claims earlier, the things that people are nervous about, it's mostly around the ADHD, the hyperactivity, the migraines being connected to red dye 40. But in reality, you know, what they're seeing in actual practice is if someone is having a reaction, it tends to be an allergic reaction and it mostly involves the skin. There is a lot of nervousness out there around ADHD and kids and red dye 40. So wanted to look into that a little bit more.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's, I'm not a mom. Emily's not a mom. We don't have children. So I never want to poo-poo on a parent who, you know, is trying to protect their children from something. And I totally can understand how if you see any evidence at all that there's any sort of link, being like, well, screw that, my kid's not having it, you know? The problem is, and we've talked about this in a multitude of different episodes, is the fact that we don't even really know the cause of ADHD. So if we don't even really know the cause, how can we say that the cause is this random red food dye coloring? And again, going back to the study that really even began looking into this, it wasn't even just the red food dye. It was the 6 different food dyes that were in different combinations. And we didn't prove that it caused ADHD from that study. Not in the slightest. If anything, a combination of these different food dyes decreased their ability to pay attention when playing a video game. Is that really the same thing as saying, oh, and therefore it causes ADHD, right? Because we want there to be an answer. We want to be able to cure kids from ADHD or whatever it is. In the same way that people fall for the medical medium who says that ADHD is caused by deposits of, what did he say? It was like deposits of heavy metal toxins in the center of your brain. And like, depending on how much heavy metal you get in there, you either get ADHD or autism. You know, it's like, that one seems obviously a little bit more wackadoodle, and it is, but it's the same thing. People want absolutes. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, that's what it comes down to. Like, yes, there are some studies that show that red dye 40 in combination, again, with these other food dyes might be linked to inabilities to focus when testing again on sort of these like video game concentration tests that they do. But causality has absolutely not been established. And if you think about all the other different environmental factors that kids have nowadays that they were not exposed to 100 years ago, 50 years ago in terms of technology. And I mean, I'm even thinking, I can't imagine being a kid right now and having to like process all the amount of information that's being shoved down our throats at any given second with all the technology we have. There's so many other things other than red dye 40 that might be going into a kid being overstimulated and again, we don't even really know what the quote unquote cause of a disorder like ADHD is. The FDA does acknowledge that there does seem to be a little bit of evidence that some people do seem to be more sensitive to food dyes than other. I saw a study also that showed that there was probably some sort of genetic component to whether or not you're sensitive to these things. There was a review of 34 studies, and it showed that with children that had already been diagnosed with ADHD, when they removed red food dye from their diet completely, that 8% of them saw a little bit of symptom relief. Even if the red food dye was a contributing factor to the ADHD, or there is some sort of decline in focus or something like that, if you do consume red food dye for some people, we're talking about 8%. That means 92% saw no symptom relief when they removed red food dye from their diet. And going back to the original claims, there are people out there harping that red food dye causes ADHD in children. Well, very clearly, we are showing that 92% of kids, when you remove red food dye from their diet, do not experience any symptom relief. If it was that obvious of a cause, when you took that out of the diet, they should all experience, or the majority should experience, symptom relief, right? Mm-hmm. So is there potentially a factor of there's some sort of response in some people with certain genetics? Yeah, probably. You know, we do. The bulk of evidence shows, like, for a very small population, there might be a minimally antagonistic effect of eating red food dye. But again, it's sort of these like hyperbolic statements of it's causing this. It's, you know, such an issue for all of our kids, blah, blah, blah. It's like it might be an issue for some. Luckily, red food dye, you know, it's certainly not something that's found in a ton of foods. There's no nutrient value to red food dye. You know, like removing it from your diet, it's not going to detriment your diet in any way.
Right.
But it's just like this fear mongering and like, okay, let's just like actually have an understanding of what the research actually shows about this compound.
For sure. Yeah. So in practice, when we take a look at that, take a step back and say, okay, we've laid it all out. This is what we know about red dye 40. In practice, I mean, if you are a parent and you have a child with ADHD and you want to do everything you can to ensure that it doesn't get worse, then avoiding red dye 40 is something you could try. Is this something that is like life or death, that, you know, if they're at a party, you need to with a little kid party, and you don't need to like follow them around and like tell the parents like, you know, to check all the food labels and make sure there's no red dye 40. Like, it's not make or break like that. Again, like Marie said earlier, you parents out there, you're in it. We get it. It's totally different than our experience. If you want your kids to avoid it, like that's fine. But it's probably not something that you want to spend like a ton of energy and stress over. What's the saying? Like, die on a hill, or that's not the hill mm-hmm. to die on, right? It's like this one food coloring. So yeah, you know, in summary, with all of our findings, basically for adults, for adults and for kids, there's not a lot of research behind it. Some people, it might cause some allergies, specifically like skin-related allergies. So here's the thing. I always tell people, like, if you eat a food and you don't feel good after, that's something to notice. Like, mm-hmm. notice that and maybe try to avoid that food most of the time. If you drink a Mountain Dew Code Red and you get hives, don't drink it anymore, right? Like, that's your body reacting. I get it. Like, that's a very real thing. But do we all need to like cut red 40 out of all of our diets and stress and read all of the ingredients of everything and make sure we never get it? No. If you have a kid with ADHD, you can try cutting out red 40 and see if it helps. Now, you know, you've gotten to this point in the podcast, so you can make an educated decision if that's something that you would like to do. But for most people, you know, red 40, it's likely safe. It's recognized as safe across the world. And Marie, you made a good point in our notes. Hyperactivity after eating food with red 40 might be from the dye, or it could also be from all the sugar in the red velvet chocolate chip cookie that your kid just ate. So yeah, so just keeping that in mind, it's really hard to isolate it down to one thing and say, you know, it's for sure the red 40. When it comes to the BS stamp, what are your thoughts, Marie?
I mean, one more point I want to make, and then I'll designate a BS stamp. It's like, also, as like general healthful nutrition recommendations, we don't like recommend that you go out and eat a bunch of crap with Red 40 in it. Right. Like, if you think about the foods that have Red 40, very ultra processed, usually tied to some sort of sweet snack, candies and sodas and all that kind of stuff. So we're not telling you to like go out and eat a bunch of Red 40 and you'll be fine. We're just saying, like, if once a year you drink a Mountain Dew Code Red, watch there not even be Red 40 in Mountain Dew Code Red. We're about to get sued.
Oh, but, like, I'm about to look. Yeah. I know. Now that we're, I'm looking it up right now. Now that we're like throwing out brand names.
Whatever it is, like, just, I would say, just don't panic about if you are somebody who generally eats healthfully, generally doesn't eat a lot of like candies and cookies that are super dyed and super processed and all that. If that's not a big bulk of your diet, I would say it is not something to worry about. It's BS to worry about. Now, if you take a good hard look at what you or your child is eating day to day, and there is a bunch of that stuff in there, I would say focusing more on how can we create more healthful nutrition behaviors with more fruits and vegetables and proteins that aren't super processed and whole grains, you know, like all these things that also don't have red dye 40 in it. I think that just changing nutrition habits and looking at that way is going to make a bigger impact than just like furiously reading food labels and choosing one candy over another because one has red 40 and one doesn't. You know what I mean? Like, at the end of the day, they're both foods that you really shouldn't be eating a whole lot of anyways. So red food dye 40 is like probably pretty easy to avoid if you don't eat a lot of processed foods or don't eat a lot of those sugary snacks. So I don't know. I mean, right now, like you said, it's generally recognized as safe. The evidence is very minimal and there's no health consequences to eliminating it. There's also doesn't seem to be a lot of evidence that if you eat foods that have red dye in them, in the amounts that you should be eating them anyways, that it's going to do anything negative.
Right. Focus that effort into highly effective habit changes, right? Instead of scouring every nutrition label for Red 40. But I looked it up. We're in the clear. There actually is Red 40 in Code Red Mountain and Yellow 5 and Blue 1. But nobody's going to be drinking it unless you've had it in your pantry for the past 18 years because it was discontinued in 2005. So it doesn't even exist anymore. But it was discontinued due to potentially low sales.
Dude, I will tell you, if there was any generation that it was at the highest risk for red food dye 40 poisoning, call it what you will, it is ours. It is the millennials, because the shit that they were selling in the 90s was wild. I look back at like old commercials and stuff. We actually recently just had a 90s theme party and we were able to order a bunch of snacks. Like, we got them off of Amazon. I was just like, the 90s truly was like just another time when it came to commercialism and just crazy snacks. Like, do you remember those Heinz squirts that was like ketchup that was bright blue and like
green?
Listen, the millennials were fine. We made it through the snacks of the 90s.
I know. Other generations might disagree that we're fine, but we feel like we're fine. And I mean, you could just tell because like, every time you'd eat something, your tongue would be the color of the food you ate. Like, it's just crazy. Yeah, there are some wild, wild foods out there. Still are. Some of them have made it into the, you know, 2020s, but crazy. Yes. So, thoughts on the BS stamp?
I'm going to give the very shocking claim of red food dye causes ADHD a big old BS stamp.
Right.
With all of the caveats that we've already said leading up to this point.
Yeah. Agreed. The only time in this situation where I would say maybe like not BS is if you have a kid with ADHD and you want to try out cutting out Red 40. Go for it. Right? But does it cause ADHD? No. And it's not something that everyone should freak out about. You're having it in an amount that has been proven to be safe. So it's all good. All good there. But speaking of... Oh, wait, go ahead.
I'm really excited for this BSPS because I have a quick story to tell.
Oh, good.
A little side tangent. So today, as of the day that we're recording this episode, I had a consult this morning and I had a guy come in and we were talking about weight loss. And he was like, oh, I just have a question about this random influencer, this V-Shred guy that I keep seeing.
Yes.
And I really don't talk about the podcast at work that much. But I was like, okay, we literally just did an episode on this dude. So I sent it to him and I gave him sort of the rundown. He was like, oh man, like that's so awesome. And then he goes, okay, I have one more question. I've just been weirdly seeing it, but there's some ice hack that I've been seeing online. I like died laughing. I was like, dude, that's what our BSPS is on today. And I was like, my co-host is the one that's sort of doing this segment, so I'll report back. But I just want to give a shout out because he said he was going to listen to this episode. You know who you are. But I just thought it was so funny that he literally asked about this and I had not heard of this. I had kind of just briefly gone over your notes, Emily, when he asked me about this. And I was like, hang tight, my dude. I'll get back to you tomorrow. I'm going to let my co-host take the reins on this one.
I love that story. This was also a listener submission, like I said, because I am, you know, I hadn't heard of this either. I have never been more confused. And like, this is going to be a buckle in. It's going to be a wild ride. I still can't wrap my head around what's going on here. So like I confessed earlier, whenever I do my research, I go to Google first. Type in Alpine Ice Hack Weight Loss Pills. That's what the listener submission was. They're like, there's this it's called the Alpine Ice Hack. It's on TikTok, and there's some kind of weight loss pills involved. It's called the Alpine Ice Hack for Weight Loss. But what they're actually selling, they're selling these pills by this company called Alpine Lean. And these pills were first released, went for sale online back in October of 2022. So not that long ago. Basically what this company, we'll get into what it is, but what this company has done, they've reached out to an insane amount of influencers on TikTok, on YouTube, to write blogs, all of this stuff. And they all go about it the same way. If you Google this, you're going to see a ton of like YouTube videos come up saying, Alpine ice hack, is it real or is it fake? And you go into them, and what it is just people they're making these videos, but they're not saying whether it's fake or not. They're just like telling you about the product and then really drilling in. This is the product and people are losing weight. And if you want to buy it, you have to go specifically to this website, which if anyone ever tells you that, like run. That was the same shit that Dr. Oz did with the, who was it? It might have been Dr. Oz. Someone went on Oprah. I think it was Dr. Oz trying to sell the green coffee bean pills and say, have to buy it from this one website.
Because, yeah, that was Dr. Oz.
Yes, because that website was giving him money to say that. Like, it makes me so mad. But basically, that's what these people are doing. They're not even giving you the facts about what this thing is. From their website, it says, Alpine Lean is an alpine rich, what alpine rich means, superfood nutrient extract formula. A mouthful.
That is buzzword.
Alpine rich superfood nutrient extract formula using 6 natural ingredients to target inner core body temperature. So their whole spiel is that people who are overweight or obese tend to have a lower core body temperature. And if you take this stuff, this Alpilene pill, it will raise your core body temperature, which will help deliver natural weight loss. They say that there are studies involved, and we will look into that. But basically, that's what they're saying this supplement does. You take it, your inner core body temperature goes up, which they claim boosts your sleeping metabolism, delivers impressive weight loss results without any known side effects or customer complaints. So what's in this pill is 6 things: golden algae, dika nut, drumstick tree leaf, bigurate orange, ginger rhizome, and turmeric rhizome. So none of these things, the ultimate goal here is weight loss. And if any of these things were truly tied to substantial weight loss, I promise you, Marie and I would know, and we would be telling you guys. It's not like we're withholding information from the world and these people have just figured it out. Like, this is the perfect combination for things that are going to help you lose weight and even raise your core body temperature. We can safely say there's no research that this specific combination of supplements in the pill does anything. That's number one. But when we look into the claims about the core body temperature, like that's what they're really getting at here, is that taking this pill is going to raise your core body temperature and help you lose weight without doing anything else. They go as far as to say that instead of burning 1500 calories per day at a cooler temperature, if you take this pill, your body warms up so much that it can burn 2500 calories per day just from taking a pill? 1,000 more calories? What?
That's like dangerous. If there was something you would take that instantly burns 1,000 calories, that is dangerous. Like, that is the shit that was laced in hydroxycut back in the day that, like, immediately sent people to the ER.
Right? It's just, it's so scammy. And the actual research that you look at, so it is recent. It's 2023. I looked into this study. It's crazy. They looked into body temperature measurements from the year 1860 to now. And they looked at different groups. Like the earliest group was a cohort one, the Union Army veterans of the Civil War from 1860 to 1940. And in this group, they just grabbed old data. Apparently they had, you know, this group had had their body temperatures taken for a long, you know, daily for a long time. And it was all recorded, obviously, like by hand. And they took that information and then a cohort from a little bit later, like mid to late 90s, and then a cohort from now, like the 2000s. And they compared all of the different temperatures. And the findings were that the core body temperature for people has decreased by 0.03 degrees Celsius per birth decade. Every decade, its core body temperature has gone down by 0.03 degrees Celsius. It's not a whole lot, but even if it was, like, the way they got the temperatures, it's not even known from the earliest.
That's
like
what
the 1860s.
I'm like, oh, are we using a consistent thermometer measurement over the last 200 years?
No, this is literally what it says in the study. Whether the temperatures were taken orally or in the axilla is unknown. Both methods were employed in the 19th century, but oral temperature was more common. They also say precision of the instruments is also unknown. Like,
well, no
this
shit.
Isn't good information.
Also, none of this therefore means. And therefore, when your body temperature is lower, you are fatter. Like, they just make that leap. They're like, oh, we're 0.03 degrees Celsius cooler with very flawed measurements. And somehow that means, therefore, we're all fatter. And then they take an additional leap. This company is like, and therefore, if you eat the extracts of these six random things, you're going to be skinny. It's like, what the fuck do any of these things have to do with each other?
It's ridiculous. It's all just so, it's like a house built on sand. You know, that base is not there.
No, this is a house built on unicorn poop.
There you go, even better. And then I wanted to look into one other study that they talk about. They say further clinical research from Switzerland has shown that inner body temperature plays a role on how your body metabolizes fat. Okay, so I look at this study. I swear I must have read it like 10 times. I could not understand why they cited this study because it was literally saying the opposite. It was saying body temperature is strongly associated with obesity markers in men and postmenopausal women. And they were talking about higher body temperature. So the exact opposite of what they were saying. I think someone just didn't read the study. Or maybe I'm reading it wrong. Maybe I'm crazy. I just, I read it many times. And that was what I got from it, was that higher body temperature is associated with obesity markers in men and postmenopausal women. I don't know.
What both of these studies fail to show, even if, let's say we had overwhelming evidence that, yeah, either being higher or lower temperature made you obese. Let's say we came to a consensus on that. And there was a lot of evidence. Now we need to produce the evidence that taking the extracts of these six random plants are going to increase or decrease, whichever way we need to go, your core body temperature to a point in which you are burning 1,000 additional calories, but somehow doing it in a way that is safe and not sending you to the ER. Like, this is all just so stupid.
Thank you. Thank you. Like, let's take a step back and really look at what we're doing here. Why aren't they showing studies of people taking Alpine Lean and losing weight? Because it doesn't work. Because it's impossible, because it's not how it works. It's just like crazy. So it's a true test of, you see things on TikTok and on Instagram, the YouTube, whatever. Don't buy into it without doing your research or asking us to do the research. Because this one was especially frustrating to research. I was like pulling my hair out. But basically, yeah, this is, no matter what these studies say about core body temperature, this and that, at the end of the day, this pill, it hasn't been studied. And just because people are saying they've lost a ton of weight, do you know that? Yeah, stay away.
Hey, everybody, this is Marie here. This is a post-original recording edit. In addition, Emily right now is in the Bahamas on vacation, so part of the reason why we had to take a couple weeks off. But we had recorded our last episode, and we had recorded our BSPS. And like Emily said at the beginning of the episode, she's not on TikTok. We've gotten a request for this Alpine Ice Challenge, and so that's what we looked up, or the Alpine Ice Hack. That's what we looked up when we were doing the episode. There is such thing, that product exists. That's what we just talked about. But then we basically found out that what the TikTok challenge is, or what the TikTok hack is people are literally just eating ice in the morning in an attempt to speed up their metabolism. So, like I said, Emily texted me pretty much while she was boarding the plane to go to the Bahamas. And I was like, I'll just add a little addendum to make sure that we cover both the Alpine Ice Hack, which again is what we just talked about, and also just this TikTok Ice Hack, just so that we have both of our bases covered. But it's sort of the same idea as what we just talked about. Essentially, people are claiming that if you eat a bunch of ice, your body will have to burn more calories to heat your body back up. So it's the same sort of thinking as what we had just talked about, of like, the more that your body is burning on hot, that you're just going to burn more calories, and that if you cool your body down, that you have to expend more energy to heat it back up. Listen, it's all just so ridiculous. It's so negligible. If you like a nice cool glass of water, if you like chewing on ice, whatever it is, that's fine. It's going to hydrate you. Yeah, it might make you a little bit colder, in the same way that drinking an ice cold glass of water is going to be a colder experience than drinking a room temperature one. But if you're eating a normal amount of ice, it's going to be a negligible effect on your metabolism, on your calorie burn. It will not make a difference in your body composition, in your weight. And if you are eating an amount of ice that it causes your metabolism to actually increase because you are decreasing your internal temperature so much that you have to boost your metabolic rate and spend a ton of calories to heat your body back up, that's like what happens when you're going hypothermic. So if you are eating ice to the point of where your body is starting to shut down, that's a massive problem. And I'm hoping that nobody is eating that amount of ice. There's absolutely no evidence that people who eat more ice versus people that don't have lower body weights, I mean, you would have to be spending all day and night eating ice, doing nothing else, just eating ice. It's ridiculous. If you like ice, great. No reason to be making this part of your day, unless you really just like ice, you find it refreshing, and you want to throw it in your water in the morning. Great. But that's all I've got for you, is that little addendum. But that's all I have on that. Well, thank you for doing that deep dive. It ceases to amaze me how even, this is a brand new product, like November 2022, October 22, you said it came out, and it's literally just a pill of bullshit, and people are still buying it. It's sad.
It's sad. Suspend belief if things like this come up and they seem too good to be true, because they usually are. Like, we'll tell you if anything comes up that actually works and is studied, right? We'll be the first to let you know. But this is not it. We're not there yet. But thank you all for listening. Thank you for your submissions. We would love to hear from you. So if you have any suggestions on topics or questions for us, definitely do reach out. You know how to reach us. But until next time, I'm Emily.
And I'm Marie.
And don't let the BS get the best of you.